Thank you. So to continue the conversation around criticism, I'd like to welcome Jane Howard. So Jane is a freelance journalist, critic, artist and researcher. She's a contributing editor at Kill Your Darlings, where she focuses on podcast criticism and a regular contributor to The Guardian Australia. Her writing has been published in ABC Arts Online, Real Time, Mean Gin, The Lifted Brow, Crikey, Junkie and The Stage. Howard's artistic work explores writing in collaborative digital spaces, most prominently as director of the 2016 Digital Writers Festival. She is currently Manager of Communications and Development at ACT Now, Research Assistant at Deakin University, and a 2018 Australia Council Future Leader. And the title of Jane's paper is Artists Need Audiences, Need Critics: Why Companies Aren't Engaging with Criticism and How This Hurts Their Cause. Thank you.
I think I'm stepping on a bit of the toes of John's talk in this, so forgive the similarities, but I think they're probably obvious that why we would have similarities. So the arts in Australia, I'm also just to preface, I primarily write about performance rather than the visual arts, so I am coming at this from quite a different perspective than a lot of people in this room. The arts in Australia have never been particularly welcoming to its critics, and I think this hostility is growing. At the same time, we're watching the space for professional arts journalism and criticism evaporate. Contractors and staff writers have lost their positions. Freelancers like myself have found themselves competing year on year for an ever-shrinking pot. Since I began writing professionally in 2012, most of my peers have left full-time writing. Some, like me, have shifted into part-time freelancing. I try and write one day a week around a day job. Others have left for the often too closed conversations of academia or else left writing altogether. I came into the industry precisely as it started truly facing the crisis established by the internet, diminishing readerships, advertising dollars going to Facebook instead of the local press. Over my career, over 3,000 journalists have left the Australian industry. While the internet was supposed to be the great democratiser, it has marginalised niche areas of writing like the arts. With detailed metrics, publishers know how few people were engaging with the arts pages, and with readers no longer engaging with a newspaper as a curated artefact, the cultural cachet that came with having a detailed arts page evaporated. So this is a sample of the last 10 years of arts journalism at the Sydney Morning Herald. Again, not to call out John in this, but you can see this is just four companies: Art Gallery New South Wales, the Sydney Theatre Company, Belvoir, and the Museum of Contemporary Art. You can put anything on this graph and they all follow the same trend. It's not fun. So since I began writing, I've watched arts journalism and in particular theatre and dance criticism increasingly struggle to keep its head above the water. But I don't believe that this is merely a symptom of a struggling media industry. Even more acutely, I believe it is a symptom of an Australian performance industry which is at best weary of and at worst contemptible to opinion and critique. But by disallowing critical voices, organisations perform a disservice to their audiences, a choice to engage with their minds only as consumers and not as active participants. With critical thought, good and bad work becomes augmented into exciting exercises in intellect and discussion, the relationship with the art and artists growing long after leaving the venue. An arts industry that doesn't believe in critical voices is an arts industry that doesn't believe in audiences. And in the face of this, I'm finding the theatre a harder and harder place to reconcile being in. So how can we make this change? Theatre itself is now competing with the internet. Why pay to watch a play? Why leave the house when instead you can watch Netflix? Why, as I acutely discovered this year, spend your time reviewing theatre in uncomfortable seats when you can spend your time reviewing podcasts while walking the dog? But what theatre has always done best is be a physical space created by and for people. It is, at its core, a place for collaboration and discussion, a place for ideas to be challenged, for new worlds to be seen, for the world to become bigger and less lonely. It is a place of ideas and thoughts, and a distrust of critics creates a place distrusting of ideas and of thoughts. A distrust of criticism means audiences are being disregarded as whole people. If we are to ask questions of the future of performance, I truly believe it is only through accepting critical thinking and thinkers that that organisations will be able to grow. Australia's marginalisation of criticism is nothing new. In her 2005 book, Not Wrong, Just Different, one of Australia's greatest theatre critics, Catherine Brisbane, wrote about returning to the Australian newspaper for a short stint in the late 70s. She wrote, "The conditions were disappointing. By now, the arts editor and the publicist were entrenched, reviews were assembled onto an arts page, and the reviewer no longer had the mandate to report news, range over subject matter, or indeed influence newspaper coverage in any way. The task no longer held any joy." Not Wrong, Just Different is Brisbane's collected writings from 1968 to 1985, and of the publications that she wrote for after leaving The Australian, only one, the Sydney Morning Herald, is still extant. The Bulletin, one of the publications she wrote for, ran from 1880 to 2008. It missed the boat in being archived online. It hasn't been caught up by Trove because Trove focuses on newspapers and The Bulletin was a magazine. Last year, I worked as a research assistant for the theatre critic Alison Croghan, who's creating her own book of her selected work, and I went to the library to look through the old issues of The Bulletin. The only way to read any of her history of arts criticism, or indeed the entire magazine's art criticism history, is through microfiche. I flicked through publications spanning almost a decade of Australian news coverage, where arts coverage was crafted with as much rigour and often length as the politics coverage it sat aside. But for Brisbane, it wasn't all cosy for Croghan. Alison was infamously banned by Playbox Theatre for her reviews, who subsequently tried to get her fired from her post at The Bulletin in the early 90s. The banning of a critic was news enough to be featured on 60 Minutes. And in the end, Croghan left the paper and barely wrote about theatre for 12 years before starting her blog, Theatre Notes. During the gap in 1997, she was interviewed by The Age in relation to her work as a poet and librettist. On criticism in Australia, she said, you find to your despair that any kind of healthy public debate is completely impossible. Maybe it's naivety, but I can't help but think things are getting worse. Alongside witnessing the collapse of journalistic spaces and employment in Australia, I've also been witness to a growing dislike of criticism from within artistic establishments. The loss of space in newspapers has emboldened companies to wear their dislike proudly. I've been writing for The Guardian for 6 years. I have been nominated for 3 SA Media Awards. I don't think it's hubris to say I'm good. And yet at some point or another, I have been removed from the media list of nearly every performance organisation in South Australia. Sometimes I can get myself placed back on the list, sometimes I can't. I'm not alone. Major theatre companies around the country are infamous for blacklisting critics. Publicists will tell editors what critics they are allowed to send to review their shows. A recent feature in the Sydney Morning Herald considered if criticism has a role in determining arts funding levels. Talking about critics to journalist Andrew Taylor, Bell Shakespeare Advisory Board member Rebecca Huntley seemed to accuse critics of being too harsh on Bell Shakespeare productions because they took too many risks. She said, "Everyone criticises Australian theatre for being too safe and not experimenting. Sometimes you try new things and they don't always go how you expected." This is in contrast to a theatre industry which speaks softly under their breath about how terrible Bell Shakespeare is, about how they're better avoided, about how the company is devoid from risk. An industry which will send you emails and private messages on social media when you write a negative review, agreeing with you and thanking you, but would never ever dare to say so publicly. So while these reviews might be praised in hushed voices, we have a culture that is so fearful of having conversations amongst itself that it wishes to refuse the space for anyone else to have these conversations too. And so what of the audience? If they are only told that the critics are wrong, to be distrusted, to be hidden, what happens when they have a disappointing experience at the theatre? Do they believe they are wrong too, or that theatre as a whole is not to be trusted or to have time invested in it? Without space created for discussion and conversation, they are given the opportunity to give up. So here's where I want to talk about what we miss out when we ignore criticism. I believe criticism can create a stronger arts community, stronger audiences, and a stronger connection between audience and artist. I am a critic because I enjoy critical thinking. And while I have developed this into a specialist skill, it's a skill that everyone should have access to. It's a skill that arts organisations should be interested in supporting, not interested in quashing. A culture where arts critics are banned, where journalists are refused access, where social media managers won't share anything less than a 4-star review, not only helps in the speed of destruction of the Australian arts industry, arts journalism industry, it also crucially diminishes the role and the place of the arts themselves. Criticism is an art form which grows in a space of conversation. My reviews may read like a singular take, but they are created in conjunction and often debate with an editor. They are designed to be a starting point for conversation, for disagreement over emails or in the comments section, for people telling me I am an idiot for disliking a show, for people saying I showed them something in a production they hadn't seen themselves. Much of the most interesting criticism today makes this conversational aspect explicit. Dialogue reviews on Exuent magazine or in podcasts like the Slate Culture Gabfest. The arts deserve audiences who are empowered critical thinkers. Audiences deserve to see work where they have been empowered to think and connect critically. The idea of criticism as conversation being lost, where arts organisations choose This idea of criticism as conversation is being lost. When arts organisations choose to disallow critics, they disallow conversation. The current art landscape's wariness of arts criticism suggests the only way to engage with the arts is uncritical positivity. Any other response is worthless. A night at a bad production becomes just that if an audience has no way to critically engage with a work. A night of disappointment becomes nothing more than a dissuasion of audiences from returning to the theatre. If the only dialogue allowed is positive, and increasingly often merely direct marketing, where are we giving audiences the skills to think about a work? And in a city like Adelaide, how many times have we left a show at the Adelaide Festival Centre to only find all of the bars are closed? It's not only is this intellectual space for discussing art diminished, the physical space is as well. In contrast, critical thinking allows this disappointing work to become an exciting exercise in intellect and discussion, the relationship with the art growing long after leaving the venue. The value of the art isn't wholly bound in the experience of seeing the art. It grows in debate. Critical thinking augments a good night at the theatre too. Worth isn't measured simply in enjoyment, but in the ability for the audience to tease apart why that enjoyment exists. When companies refuse to engage with critical voices, they not only do a disservice to a vibrant journalistic world, they also perform a disservice to their audiences, engaging with their minds only as consumers and not as active intellectual participants. The life cycle of an artistic work in our mind begins the first time we ever hear of it and ends the last time we ever think of it. Time spent with the work itself is only a microcosm of a much bigger picture. Disallowing criticism, both by published professionals and by lay audience members, means most of this art's life cycle is relegated to marketing. Its cycle is shortened. Its ability to inspire its audience is diminished. This intersection of a collapsing fourth estate and the arts industry's unwillingness to interact with criticism, most acutely, in my opinion, theatre criticism, has ensured audiences who are interested in engaging with critique are going to find fewer writers to engage with. In 2018, we are watching the face of the Australian playwright and the Australian director becoming less male and less white than ever before. And yet the dominant voice of the Australian critic is still this white male. critics such as Cassie Tung, Alison Croghan and myself are strangely still marginalised for being feminist in our writing, to say nothing of the environment for anyone who's not white and middle class. We are far too late seeing a rise in Asian Australian voices on stage, but where will the Asian Australian theatre critics be supported? Witness, Alison Croghan and Robert Reed's new independent publication have brought on Carissa Lee as their First Nations emerging critic. And under creative director Jacob Bohem, Urram Boy ran an incredible program called Black Critics to support black writers create critique from within the festival. But where are the other places we'll be able to see these writers grow and thrive beyond platforms for the new and emerging? I got my start, truly, as a critic under the Text Camp program at Next Wave, a program which is now defunct, Writing for Real Time, a publication which is now defunct. But I had somewhere to go, and I don't know if the next generation does. Another major voice that is missing from the conversation is artists as critical thinkers. The theatre and performing arts industries are especially adept at silencing dissenting voices. While journals and magazines covering visual arts and literature have historically been supported by the Australia Council, theatre coverage wasn't presented this same space. Largely, this is because of a bigger separation between theatre critics and theatre makers. Artists and curators are used to writing about their work, translating a visual medium into a text-based one, and authors frequently moonlight as book critics. But the world of the stage has rarely extended itself into the world of the essay. Resultingly, a large population of potential critical thinkers are excluded from talking about their art form, and in particular, in speaking out when it's subpar, letting audiences know that the work staged for them isn't always amazing. When Croghan shut down Theatre Notes in 2012, the Australia Council responded by talking to various theatre critics and bloggers, considering the ways their funding systems are set up to exclude individual arts journalists. They were concerned about the loss of Theatre Notes, and they were exploring if they could start to support theatre criticism. For one reason or another, they decided against it. Almost every blog which was extant at the time of the closure of Theatre Notes, including my own, is now defunct, and new blogs haven't stepped in to take their place. Twitter, Facebook, blogs were supposed to be the great democratisers of critical thought. I have been on more panels called Everyone's a Critic than I can remember. But one, the late noughties and early 2010s saw these conversations thrive online, it was through the blogs and social media spaces that I found my voice. These conversations about theatre have dried up. There is a healthy conversation about Netflix series and relatively healthy conversation about books, which is supported by the collapse of the physical boundaries for these conversations. But as soon as we look towards the theatre or indeed the art gallery, the Australian physical footprint for these works seems to evaporate the conversation. This isn't true of everywhere. Theatre blogs still thrive in the UK. Twitter conversations are long and involved in New York. But the distrust of critical conversation in Australia runs deep. In my work, I'm interested in thinking about how we can support critical voices inside and outside the position of critic, probably actually even more acutely thinking outside of this role. I'm a jobbing freelancer. I write for nearly anyone who will have me, but I'm most excited by writing for a generalist audience. When I'm writing at publications like The Guardian or Kill Your Darlings, I'm writing for a culturally engaged audience, but I write with the assumption that they know little about the specifics of the work that I have in hand. Writing about theatre, a hyper-local art form for international and national publications, has impacted the way that I consider the reader. But this was scarily and excitingly turned on its head this year when I turned my writing at Kill Your Darlings towards podcast criticism. Suddenly, I wasn't considering how to explain local work to a global audience. I was considering how to explain a global work to an audience who, instead of spending the time reading me, could just listen to the show. This reinforced my ideals about the beauty of critical thinking and the way that good critique can inspire and grow the minds of readers and help form them into participants of the same process. What I loosely call my artistic practice follows these same principles. How can we get audiences engaged with and excited by critical thinking? My biggest project in this vein was called Simple Art Transfer Protocol, which is named after the internet standard for email transition, Simple Mail Transfer Protocol. It was commissioned by the Performance and Art Development Agency for their Near and Far Festival, and it remains an incredibly rare example of a performance organisation in Australia directly engaging with criticism. Over 5 days, conversation between myself, Cassie Tung in Sydney, Megan Vaughan in London, and Nicole Serratore in New York City, along with email subscribers from 29 countries on 5 continents, we generated 73 emails totaling over 33,000 words. We jumped off the 4 other artistic works in the Near and Far Festival to weave a conversation capturing 80 other performance works, live art, theatre works that we had seen or were seeing, along with references to dozens of books, films, television series, visual artworks and festivals. It was an exciting experiment in what it means to seek criticism within an artistic space and what it means to think of criticism as this ongoing conversation and not as a full stop. My other large-scale work in this area was when I was director of the 2016 Digital Writers Festival. With collaborators Veronica Sullivan and Kylie Maslin, we created My Brilliant Book Club, an interactive online book club, forming a collaborative shifting review and conversation about Miles Franklin's My Brilliant Career. Festival audiences were invited to augment their opinion directly on top of the text, leaving almost 450 comments over the 10-day festival. At the core of these works is the idea that critical conversation is exciting and empowering. My Brilliant Career was chosen for the practical reason of it sitting outside of copyright, but also by using a non-living writer, there was no fear of self-censorship. One of the critical models I'm most excited by is Theatre Club, run in London by critic Maddie Costa. The program runs irregularly in conjunction with various theatres around the city, and it runs like a book club. Audience members are invited to talk about the performance they have seen. Crucially, the artists are not invited. This is not a Q&A. This is about asking what happens when critical discussion is placed at the core for celebration and critique. Croggan's Witness Live is making inroads in establishing a similar framework in Melbourne, supported by companies with discounted tickets, but it's still taking place within a hostile environment, one which seems slow to change. I don't know where we go from here. I believe in criticism and in critical conversations. Each year, I believe less and less in my ability to continue contributing to them. The space to publish is contracting, and the readership is shrinking as engaging with critical reviews becomes more and more of a niche activity. Theatre companies will continue to tout their work received 4 stars and continue to take theatre critics off their invite lists. I recently wrote a piece considering the ways cultural institutions are using podcasts. In it, I wrote, "As I listened to podcast after podcast across the spectrum of cultural institutions, I found organisation after organisation using podcasts as a cheap augmentation of existing programming. Simple recordings of talks running alongside performances and exhibitions, a junior member of the marketing team tasked with recording an interview with an artist in an echoey room, rarely digging beneath the surface of interviews the artist had done before." What I did not say is most of these podcasts came from the Australian theatre sector. I tried to find a theatre podcast to write about in the piece. Instead, what I found was dull marketing content for an audience of consumers looking for a theatre 101 rather than an audience of engaged thinkers who care about an art form. This exercise of really diving into marketing activities reinforced my ideals that criticism in Australia needs to be supported. Audiences deserve more than what they're being given, but the only way that is going to change is if support for critical voices and interrogation comes from within inside the establishment. Otherwise, art just becomes content. And what's the point of that?